And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And let's see, the telephone numbers in here are still 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. We kind of ended the last hour, well, the whole last hour was kind of beating up on things that are going wrong in the world right now. I think it's probably a good idea for us to talk about what's going right. There are a lot of things happening in a good way in the United States. I mentioned housing starts last hour.
The NASDAQ closed at a record high, 5210.
Right. Gold is way down. That doesn't sound like it's a good thing, but it really is when it comes to economic news.
Well, there's a parallel here.
What's the parallel?
Do you remember when gold was really, really high? And the advertisements on this radio program were for buy gold.
Now it's buy real estate.
Now that gold is down about 50% or so from where it was when they were asking you to buy it, so you would have lost 60 or 75% if you sold. Now they're saying buy houses, flip houses.
Right.
So that should be a fair warning to you right there.
I hit on one little warning that I didn't spend very much time on, and this is actually still part of good news if you understand it. That warning was that if you get a loan, a commercial loan for real estate, you're not going to get a 30-year loan. Even if you assume someone else's loan, the way they treat it gets very quickly changed to commercial-type loans if you're not living there, particularly if it's not your first home. So if you have a commercial loan, usually you have an adjustable rate mortgage of some kind, either at 5 years or 7 years or even 2 years in some cases, where they start changing the interest rate to be what the going rate is, what the rates are plus, you know, what they'll say prime plus whatever percent. And what happens there is that over the years, you have no guarantee that your cheap loan that you're getting today is going to stay cheap. If in 5 years, the interest rates are much higher than they are today, which is very likely. I mean, that's what we're talking about often, is that the real estate, the interest rates on mortgages are going up, and they're going up in an expected way. This is kind of like when we're talking about Greece. Don't be surprised if the Greek problem comes back into the news. It's coming back into the news. And if you're talking about real estate, you're talking about a known issue. Interest rates are rising. If you don't have the ability to lock in your interest rate for a very long period of time when you're talking about a commercial loan, then in 10 years or 5 years, your loan may be a lot more expensive than it is today, and there's no guarantee that you can raise the rent to continue to pay your own mortgage. Now, why is that good news? The good news is for those of us that do have good credit and can buy houses right now for ourselves, it's great. If you have a lot of cash on hand and you decide to go into the business of real estate, that can be good too. To confuse the two and say that I'm not going into business, that I'm going to do it while being a busy professional, there's a lot of danger there. Just like the idea of being able to buy and sell gold on your own time to supplement your income, or the signs on the side of the road at the stoplight that says work from home for $300 an hour doing who knows what. Those things are unrealistic. If you do your research, I am one of the greatest advocates for starting businesses. I think businesses, being involved in a business at the small level and not growing, is the core of our economy. And if you look at the number one employer in the United States, it's small businesses. You can't put it in a category if you'd think the number one employer outside the federal government's Walmart. Small businesses employ so many multiples of the employed by the large companies. It makes the large companies look like a small part of the economy, and that's the part that's looked at the most. But small businesses, if you start one, that's a great form of investment, but you know what you're getting into. The risks are there. When you're doing investments and you're not involved at the front end and making the decisions on the expenses of the business or in who's hired and who's fired, then you begin to take a risk of being involved with something with less control. And when in the stock market, you have a vote. You can say, I vote for these board members who appoint the officers of the corporation who then hire and fire. So you have some control. But you still have a lot of risks associated with that because you're not the one making the decision. In a small business, you make the decisions, but you also have all the risks. So I'm saying some things that seem fairly obvious to me, but that are important to recognize in order to start taking away that risk. That's where diversification comes in. That's where we say, all right, if we're going to be involved in an investment with a lot of risks, let's spread the risk around a little bit. Let's make sure that they're all quality investments, but spread the risk. And when you're talking about real estate, it's very hard to spread the risk because you have hard property at a given location. And that location has the risks of the community and of the city and of the state and the county and every other aspect of where you are. And I'm in saying that, most of our clients have real estate in their portfolios, in their investment portfolios. But that tends to be spread out across large areas, not concentrated in one area. I mean, if you think about what Jeff said a minute ago, my dad, Jeff Oldbaldy, said a minute ago about gold. The same can be said in Florida in 2006 about real estate. And one of the key factors there was people were saying, buy real estate, buy it in Las Vegas, buy it in Florida. People are moving there. It looks great. People have made lots of money. If people have made lots of money doing something, almost by definition, the value of the thing that they've done is high now. You tend to hear about on the radio about a trend when the prices are already really high. And the old saying, buy low, sell high, is true. It's absolutely true. And if you try to do it the reverse order, you're going to lose money. If you've got real estate that's sitting out there and people are saying, or you know people that have made huge amounts of money in real estate recently. They bought it when the prices were really low and they've sold it and now they've made a lot of money. Unless it's a localized area where you know the growth is going to be there, which that's kind of an impossibility. You can't even when you talk about Austin. Austin's a very quickly growing area, but you don't know next year if it's going to continue. One change in a law can change the valuation of real estate in any location. So knowing that and knowing the risks involved, you can make an educated decision. If you go in thinking, these people have made money and I'm just going to copy what they did, then you're about to make a mistake. You might luck out. You might make it. But if you don't know why it was that they made the money, then you're just hoping that that why hasn't changed, that the why is still going to be the same for you. One of the very, very first market cycles, this is something that's in Old Baldy's book. One of the very first market cycles is the corn hog cycle. And corn here is actually what corn was originally meant. And it's the same reason why we call a peppercorn a peppercorn. It means grain, any grain. If you look back at early market cycles, you'll see that grains were up when hog prices were down. And hog prices were up when corn prices were down. And there was a relationship, and a lot of people lost a lot of money not recognizing the relationship, and some few people made a huge amount of money in just recognizing that relationship. When hog prices are up, you buy corn because corn prices are down, and when corn prices go up, however, and this is the thing, this is what I was talking about a moment ago, the why of why it is that corn and hog had that relationship needs to be understood mm-hmm. before you get involved. But railroads changed that.
Right. That's the point. The railroads bringing beef in. New technology changes market cycles.
Right.
And just in case you haven't noticed, and I know a lot of people probably didn't notice, Google jumped like $69 billion in value
right.
in one day. In one day.
One day.
In other words, the entire euro bailout for Greece, roughly,
was the valuation change in one day
one
for
company
Google
in the for United
one
States.
Company. Yes.
And when you look at that, Google is, I think, either number two or number three largest company in the United States by market capitalization today. It is right up there with Lockheed Martin, who actually makes physical things.
So does Google now.
And Apple is...
Google's making cars.
The big one, right, but Google's not making very many cars.
Not
and they're
yet.
Not making profit
right.
from cars.
They do so information at this point.
What we're seeing at this point is a tremendous change in technology in the United States. And when tremendous changes in technology occur, it's a good idea to be broadly diversified, to take advantage of it, but not to try to outguess it.
Yeah, and this is the point that I'm making. You just helped me make it very, very, very well.
Well, thank you very much.
I mentioned Austin. Google this week started its driverless car program in Austin. There are Google cars driving along with no people in them.
Well, there's no people in them?
No
they don't have an observer?
They've been removed.
The
people have been removed. That's the whole point. If
Whoa.
There's people in them, they're in the back seat or on the side seat. They've already done their testing with the people in the front seat. And that's the big deal. The driverless cars are driverless now. And if you think about the price of real estate in Austin, I live in Austin, so this
oh,
is
wow.
a really good
yeah.
one.
Yeah, big change. Up.
I live about a mile away from my brother. Now, it's not a direct mile. It's if you went a mile, it'd be as the crow flies.
Do not fly in a straight line.
No, they really don't. But if I drive...
As the laser shoots.
Yeah, if I drive to my brother's house, it takes about 10 minutes to get there because I've got to go find the right railroad crossings and get under the highway and move mm-hmm. all... So it's not a direct route. But the difference in that mile and price per square foot is drastic. It's huge. And it has to do with the time frame it gets, that 10-minute time frame, that convenience point of where you are and how quickly you can get to the city center. And with self-driving cars, which are a reality and will be mainstream reality at some point in the next decade, if the price of real estate is based on convenience to get in and out of town, and more and more people use driverless cars, traffic issues are going to get less and less because the more driverless cars you use, the better the traffic flows. The better the traffic flows, the easier it is to spread the people out away from the city center and still have convenience access to the center, which means that the price at the center starts dropping. And we've seen this. We saw it happen with the railroads.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it with the food prices. We saw it with real estate prices. We see it with gold prices. All of this is interrelated.
I think it's entirely possible, and this is something worth listening to. I'm about to say something I think is very important. If you're an investor or if you've got a career, it's entirely possible the introduction of driverless cars will have as profound an effect upon the United States economy as the introduction of the automobile,
yeah.
widespread introduction of the automobile about 100 years ago.
It will displace
a very large portion of workers in this economy.
Let me add to that. Let me put a condition on there, and then we can make it absolute. Because you said it's very likely and all of that. The use of driverless is just drones. Okay? So it's just a computer-driven item. And I'm going to take the word automobile out because after we lose our fear of it, it goes in all directions.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to have driverless involved is going to have a larger impact on the economy of the United States than the advent of the automobile.
Okay, well, it's not the advent of the automobile, although I use that term, because the automobile also, it's the internal combustion engine.
There you go.
The tractor, the truck. Now, in the 19th century, the railroads dramatically affected society, largely contributed to a major depression in the in the 1870s.
Real estate values fluctuated rapidly, and that really, really prime real estate became worthless. Cities that existed disappeared, and cities that hadn't existed sprung up along
the
railroad.
And it changed a tremendous section of the economy. Teamsters were a big deal.
They still are in unions.
Well, no, I'm talking about in the 19th century. They were a big deal until the railroads came along, and then they ceased to be a big deal because what took hundreds of people a long time to do was done in a very short period of time by three people.
Right.
The same thing happened in the 20th century, which was a very big contributing factor to the Depression of 1920 that began in roughly 1929, was the advent of the internal combustion engine removed people from the farm, and it also destroyed towns, which you can still see. You drive through the Taylor and you drive through the little towns across Texas that used to be market towns. They were set up so that a farmer could get to town and get back in the same day. That's how frequently they were. The railroads displaced those horribly. The internal combustion engine destroyed them. The ones that were still on the railroads were destroyed because where the interstate highways go now is where the traffic is. But think about not just truck drivers, which will
that's
going to
go away. That's going to go away really, really soon. Lexus has already got some driverless trucks that they're testing. It's going to be reality.
The next thing you can think about is that the Google cars have driven, I think, 2.3 million miles in California without an accident.
Well, without accidents at fault.
Some
people rear-ended them, hit them on the side. Other people hit them.
Basically, the accident rate from driverless cars is so tiny as to be insignificant.
Yeah, way below the normal accident.
The entire automobile insurance industry, you see a lot of advertisement for is going to take a huge hit.
They're not going to be able to charge the same rates.
But not only are they not going to be able to charge the same rates, they will basically not have salespeople and they'll be out of business.
Right.
Because people will more and more not even own a car. The next thing that will happen, how about all the tremendous number of people that are involved in repairing automobiles, in scrapping automobiles, in selling automobiles. You look at that section of our economy and you start rippling that out.
Yeah, just go back to
the people that support them.
Go back to the 1920s and think there used to be stables all over town. There used to be people whose whole job was in reshoeing horses and making sure that horses were sold properly, and there were used horse dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it was used.
You know, you drive along and you look at these huge car dealerships and all the people working there, and then the mechanics that fix cars, and you think about, well, that's stable. That will never change. That will always be there.
It wasn't there before, and it's probably not going to be there after.
In 20 years, it won't be there. And that may sound like a long time and B, a bold suggestion, but
it's not so bold and it's not very long.
We all know somebody who has been killed in an auto accident.
Yeah.
And that is no longer going to be an acceptable solution.
Tens of thousands of people die every year. And I mean, if you take 9/11,
something like 40,000 or something.
If you take 9/11 and multiply it, last year we had 6,700 people in the state of Texas die in accidents, and that doesn't count the injuries. That's just the deaths.
Well, to be killed in an auto accident 20 years from now will be as big a headline as a major airplane accident is.
Right, or
today.
A terrorist.
So this, think about the complete destruction of an industry. And it's going to happen probably in the next 20 years.
And not just that industry. Trucking and...
Well, the industry, the transportation industry,
transportation,
as we know it today...
Yeah, everything around it.
...will be completely upended with a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the people still working in it. And that's just one technological change. That's just one.
And there's a lot of them in the works. A lot of them happening. And we're going to speed that up. So if you're making decisions on buying real estate based on what has always been true, you can't expect what's always been true to stay true next year or the year after that or the decade after that. And when you're getting into a loan that may be an adjustable rate mortgage, but it's a 30-year loan, you're making a 30-year decision based on information.
Yeah.
Well, on the last 30 years. And the next 30 years is going to be different than the last 30 years. That is a guarantee.
Well, things will be get interesting before very long, and you're seeing the beginning. Kind of, right now, we're in the position where the first horseless carriage just showed up in Austin.
And people are going, yeah, that's never going to catch
That'll
on.
That'll never replace horses.
Who's going to want to get in that they're loud? And in this case, they're like, who wants to sit in a car that doesn't have a driver?
Yeah.
And we're going to look back at this and say, you let people drive on the road without a computer?
I strongly believe that there will come a time when it is illegal to drive your car.
At least on the interstate, on the major areas, I think it's going to be like what you people do for horses today. You can go out to some place, and they'll make you sign all these waivers, and then they say, here's how you get into the driver's seat, and this is how you turn the driver's wheel.
Yeah, and there will be still people. It'll be very much like horses are today, and it's going to happen faster than it happened last time around.
Yeah, I agree.
So a lot of things are going to happen. We're going to break for commercials, though. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we'll be back after these. Well, I don't know how important they are, but they're definitely words. Because I'll warn you in advance.
Same ones we warned you about last time.
There is at least one commercial in this next group that you should not listen to, and I'll let you pick which one it is.
Hi, I'm John Hernan.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. It's an interesting world out there, and I just simply will say that we do not endorse or support any of the commercials that are on here, and anything that has to do with investing is certainly not supported by us on the Personal Wealth Coach, and the house flipping is generally, in my personal opinion, a good way to go broke. But it's a good way to enrich the guy who teaches you how to do it.
Yes.
Let's see what else is out there. Interest rates. We were talking about interest rates.
Right.
I am really quite confident at this point that at the September meeting...
Yeah, the interest rates are going to go up.
The Federal Reserve is going to raise their interest rates to 0.25%, and then they're probably with each succeeding meeting for some time... You're going to see another 0.25% raise because, in essence, that's what Janet Yellen said to Congress last week. She said that they were going to get started early and do so gradually. What they want to do is to have a small interest rate rise and then look around and see what effect this has, and then they're going to do it again. And there's a reason for that, and one of the reasons for it is what I was talking about, the service inflation that's going on in the United States right now is now running about, the actual service inflation is running about 3% a year. Product inflation is very, very low. As a matter of fact, in some cases, it's negative. So, but the issue is that in Texas, for example, we're down to about 4% unemployment. Well, 4% unemployment is full employment, which means that, for example, I needed some work done on my house. And everybody I talked to who was qualified to do the work said, I've already got jobs lined up, and I just had to hunt and hunt and hunt to finally find somebody who could do the work on my house before I,
before the house fell apart.
Before
completely.
The house fell apart, and I totally retired from life or something like that. You know, and I had people who they're, in other words, what I'm seeing is labor-intensive jobs that require skills at the service level, which a few years ago I could put out a call for people to do that, and I would have multiple people lining up making low bids. Now what I'm finding is I have to hunt to find somebody to do it, and I suspect given a couple of more years or even as soon as next year, it's going to be extremely difficult to get some of the things done that we're routinely get done. Among other things, we've done a really good job, believe it or not, of shutting down what's called undocumented migrant workers. And it continues to...
contrary to the popular media.
And it's kind of interesting. If you actually look at the statistics, the Obama administration has done a better job of that and shut down more of it than anybody else in the history of the United States. And they apparently are doing an exceptionally good job and really ticking off the Hispanics in the process. But this is beside the point.
But Donald Trump is doing a better job, louder, ticking off the Hispanic
population. Well, he's not doing any job about restricting immigration. What he's doing is ticking off
everyone,
the Hispanic voters across the country, and making them go vote for Democrats. The point is that we are probably going to see wage-related inflation begin to heat up as soon as next year, I would expect.
I think in Austin it's already happened.
But, I mean, it's nationwide. Really,
yeah, nationwide we are definitely going to see it happen.
And we're going to see interest rates starting to rise in September. And what does this mean to you? A couple of things. The places where there are excessive debt loads, and that does not include the federal government. The federal government really doesn't have a debt, and I realize that sounds insane. But when you have more gold sitting in your coffers than you owe the people who hold your bonds,
yeah,
that's net zero.
And by that, when we say the people that own their bonds, it means not Congress's
right
owning of Congress's bonds.
It's called debt to the public.
Yeah, debt to the public. We've got more,
including China,
more gold in the Federal Reserve Bank in Fort Knox owned by the United States government than our debt.
Yeah, Knox and New York.
Yeah, that's what the Federal Reserve and Fort Knox.
So the point is that where you see a lot of debt accumulation, which is going to be in the states and in the municipalities, where it's questionable how well they're going to be able to handle that, or where you see underfunded, dramatically underfunded pension plans, a rise in interest rate is going to have a negative effect. It's going to exacerbate that problem. But we need the rise in interest rates because otherwise we're going to have inflation. The next issue, if you hold bonds, if you hold longer, particularly longer term bonds, as interest rates rise, they're going to fall. And if you happen to be one of those persons who recently invested, for instance, in the, and I'm just going to make a bold statement here, there's a series of funds that are managed by Jeff Gundlach's company, Double Line. There's a series of bond funds, and they have had money pouring into them, even though they poured out of PIMCO. I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars a month going into those bond funds. And Morningstar has warned on them, but the money continues to flow in. The bottom line to it is they're using some pretty exotic derivatives, interest-only mortgages made into derivatives. Interest-only, meaning they got a balloon note at the end that they may or may not be able to pay, and a lot of other interesting high-interest, high-yield, which used to be called junk and will be called junk again, bonds. And as interest rates rise, all of those places that people are flocking to for safe income, including insurance companies, are going to become dangerous locales. And that's just something to be fully aware of if you're thinking that I've got a high interest bond here. I was just looking at the typical bond fund and its pricing, and it's typically around 108 right now on their bonds. And what does that mean? That means that there's an 8% guaranteed loss in principal
if you wait till maturity,
factored into those bonds. And as soon as interest rates start to rise, which they're going to do in the next couple of years, I'm quite confident, you're going to see a rush for the exits. And there is a lot of indication out there that the rush for the exit is going to trigger a crisis in the bond market. A lot of economists are talking about it, the Federal Reserve's talking about it, but the public and a lot of bond traders seem to be ignoring it, saying it's never happened before, therefore it cannot happen. We had warning.
It has happened before, though. It really has happened.
Not in recent.
Not like this, not recently. But
not in anybody's memory that's around today. So as far as they're concerned, it's not going to happen.
Right.
The fact is, it can happen. There's evidence it probably will happen. It's similar to the situation with the mortgage bonds.
Right. Mortgage bonds are bonds.
In 2007.
The 2007 bonds, the mortgages there, they were treated the same way that a lot of the bonds are being treated today. People got out of the collateralized mortgage-backed securities and thought, "Well, I'm never doing that again." And then they jumped right into really high-priced, guaranteed loss bonds. And there are reasons to have bonds in a portfolio, but you shouldn't be doubling down on them right now when they are obviously higher priced than normal.
Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. The telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I made a potentially false statement.
I said, really?
You are listening. That assumes that somebody is actually listening.
Well, the "you" is implied that they have to listen for it to be them.
But it's entirely possible that no one is listening.
It is entirely possible.
And so that would have been a false statement.
Yes.
So at any rate, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. Now let's move to China.
No, I want to stay here. Okay. I like Texas.
We can stay here and move our minds to China,
where the stock market has risen 20%.
Do you know why?
Because it fell like some phenomenal 50%.
Do you know why? Yeah, that 20%, which if you look at it, is based on about $220 billion worth of assets. It's now coming out that the stabilization effort by the Chinese government, which requested all the banks and the financial institutions to buy shares to stem off the drop in value.
You do understand that when the Chinese government requests...
Oh, yes.
That has a different meaning.
Yes. If the United States government said to me, you should buy government bonds, we would say, no, I don't think so right now. If the Chinese government said to a Chinese citizen, you should buy government bonds, and they say, you don't think so, different consequences.
Yes,
yes.
Right.
So in this case, the Chinese government went to, in its stability effort, went to the state-owned banks, which tells you a suggestion to a state-owned bank from the state is very clear, as well as to their new investment firms, that they needed to fund brokerage purchases of stocks to stop the free fall.
And they loaned them money to do it.
And they did loan them some money. But when you look at that 20% uptick, we were talking about somewhere right around $220 billion difference. The numbers come out that the loan that the government gave to these firms, and they were requiring the firms to also purchase, was $209 billion.
Mm.
So
that wasn't a very effective...
No, the only reason why the stock market in China went up is because they were trying to keep it from going down. It was a regulated effort to stop the free fall, which is probably not a good thing.
If you want to worry about something... Worry about the collapse of the Chinese economy.
Yes, because if that happens, it leads to the collapse of the Chinese government. And then
somebody said every 2 weeks, the Chinese GDP exceeds the total annual GDP of Greece. And we're all worried about Greece.
Yes. Yeah.
Do I think the Chinese government or the Chinese economy is about to collapse? No. Do I think it is potentially unstable?
Yes.
That
was a dual yes, one from each of us here.
And there is, it's an experiment, and it's an ongoing experiment. And the only reason I bring this up, other than just to let you know that the potential is there, is a very simple thing. People are afraid of China taking over the world, taking over the U.S.
It's not going to happen.
Au contraire. As a matter of fact, China looks a lot like Japan did
in the 80s.
Back in the 20th century when it was buying, because, by the way, one of the reasons our real estate prices, commercial real estate prices are going up
here.
The
Chinese are buying so much.
The Chinese are recycling the money that we send them into here. And this is, you know, insider trading, legal insider trading is a very, very, very powerful indicator of what's going on inside a company.
Right. Legal insider trading means that the executives of a company, when they sell their own stock, they mm-hmm. have to file paperwork.
Right.
So that everybody knows, and there's specific windows they're allowed to sell the stock in. But
if you read
about the insider trading going on there,
the legal insider trading,
the registered,
then, and if you see that basically all the rats are leaving the ship, that's
all the executives are selling at the same time. What does that mean?
By the way, just as an aside, rats leaving the ship is because the rats dwelt in the bottom of the bilges, and if there was a leak,
it's getting deeper.
While the ship is sitting in a harbor, they often would overlook the fact that there was a leak. And if the hull started to leak, the rats would leave the ship. Now, in this case, it seems like every billionaire or multimillionaire in China, and there are a plethora of them,
are moving money here.
Everything they can, legally or sometimes not completely legally, to realize their profits overseas when they're exporting, in such a manner that they wind up investing all of their money back into a country they think is likely to be far more stable than theirs. And that country is almost universally the United States. So they're buying real estate, they're buying golf courses, they're buying whatever they can buy. That's nothing to be afraid of, by the way. It's recycling of our money back into the United States to run prices up.
And if you remember what happened with Japan, they bought the Rockettes, Rockefeller Center, and all that good stuff. It got purchased back by Americans at a 10% price from what the Japanese paid for it.
At the height of the Japanese boom, they purchased the Pebble Beach golf course and later sold it back at about
10%.
10% of what they paid for.
Really, really, really big discounts.
And the Chinese are going to wind up doing the same thing. I'm fairly confident at this point. But they are not a threat to the economic well-being of the United States unless they lose control over there, which I kind of doubt they will, and the whole thing collapses.
Right. So now we've gone to China. Let's move to Russia.
Let's do some commercials.
Okay.
Let's do some commercials before we have to talk about Russia. Russia depresses me.
Oh, there's some good news there.
So we're going to do some commercials. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back like a bad penny. It is the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake McClure.
I don't know about the bad penny. I've had a couple of pretty rotten pennies, and I've spent them, you know, like they were in fires or something, and they're pretty messed up. And I never had them come back.
No.
But I think probably talking about back when pennies were actually worth something.
And they weren't everywhere.
Counterfeit pennies, and you would spin them, and
right.
Pretty soon you'd find them. People giving them back to you somehow.
You know, the Canadians don't use pennies anymore because
right. They don't have any sense.
Yeah. So I think we need to get rid of our sense too.
They do use loonies.
Yes, they do.
So they are a little loony. Hey.
Okay, so I wanted to hit Russia real quick.
Yeah. Good luck on that.
Russia's just turned off the gas. Well, they do this regularly where they say people haven't paid us, so we're going to turn off the gas. Whether that is Ukraine, we should call it Western Ukraine because it's really kind of two countries at this point, or three if you count the part that's
right.
Part of Russia. They
that's right. It's like three countries now.
They have cut off the gas every once in a while to Western Ukraine. They've just cut off the gas to Eastern Ukraine, to their friends that they've been supporting. They've also removed all their troops. They've stopped talking back and forth. This looks to me from looking at it from a distance, like there was a falling out in the leadership somewhere in there. However, that doesn't mean that the Russians stop being silly.
That's a very nice way of putting
right.
Insanity.
Yes. Yeah, so at the same time that they have pulled out of eastern Ukraine, South Ossetia, which is still technically part of Georgia, unless you live in Russia and then it's its own country.
Yes.
The borders are moving.
Whoa.
500 meters into what had been Georgia has been moved. The borders
have moved.
They just
moved the markers?
They just moved the markers, moved all of the barbed wire, moved all of the tanks. Everything moved forward 500 meters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's put them within 200 meters of a pipeline that's owned by BP.
So if they move another 500 meters,
they've got the pipeline. Now, what BP has said, well, we haven't had access to that pipeline since 2008 when the Russians invaded. So it's no big deal to us. We've got the thing turned off, but they might want to turn it on. So just be aware that the Russians are feeling the pinch from all of the sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have enough free cash flow to say to their buddies in eastern Ukraine, you've got free gas. They say, no, you pay us, and we'll give you gas. And look over there. There's a pipeline we might be able to use. Let's start moving in that direction. They are very gas-centric right now. They're very much oil and gas-centric. It's where all their revenues are coming from.
Yeah.
And so
interestingly, just be aware
that Georgia may see another little funness.
One of the issues behind the Iranian nuclear deal.
Right.
By the way, none of the sanctions, except on a very limited basis, were removed in that deal.
Right, right.
One of the issues on the Iranian nuclear deal is the Iranians potentially, and the United States is not going to be able to do this because we've still got sanctions in place.
Right.
But the Europeans are going to be able to assist them now in refurbishing their oil production and export
refineries and their
which by the way
process
has a tendency if once they get cranked up it will cause the price of oil you think it's
low drop even
now
further yeah
and every time You know, and of course, Israel and others are very upset, saying this will just give Iran more money to support Hezbollah or whatever. Well, actually, it'll make them more dependent on foreign capital that could be easily cut off, so it'll make them less useful, less supportive of terrorists.
Right.
But
there's a link to that I want to get to in just a minute.
But the price of oil coming down is going to hurt Russia horribly.
Horribly.
So
yeah.
the deal, I know you think this is all crazy, but this is one of those, this is where it's very complicated out there. The Iranian nuclear deal, which, by the way, again, the United States removed practically zero sanctions.
Some of the
it's
other countries
the
removed sanctions. Yeah.
Who are going to go in there, and they were going to go in there anyway. So we needed whatever deal we could get. But the issue is it will cause them to export more oil, which will cause, and also, by the way, cause them to be more involved in the community of nation, international
that's,
community of nations.
That's the point I want to make.
And make them less likely to support terrorism.
Up till now.
But it also hurts Russia at the same time.
Right. Up till now, Iran has not been part of the international community. Almost, I mean, that's period, paragraph, chapter, end of book, all the way down the road. The reason why we still have sanctions against them even after this deal is based on the fact that they did something that was, in international law, the worst possible thing you can do. They took over our embassy. They held our diplomats prisoner. You don't do that.
And we officially have designated them a state supporter of terrorism
Correct.
Because of Hezbollah, which means we can't do trade with them.
Yeah. In this deal, what for the first time ever has happened is that the Iranians are coming and asking permission to be part of the international community.
Mm-hmm.
Even their seat on the UN, when they come in and they sit down, they didn't ask for that. It was not part of the permission. They say, you're a country, you get a seat. This is the Iranians saying, we want to communicate with
right.
the rest of the world. Isolation does not work unless you want to go to war. And the more you isolate, the more likely it is that you're going to go to war.
Mm.
Eventually, I mean, this goes back to Nixon and what happened with China. People thought that Nixon going to China and opening trade and having this relationship start was the worst thing possible. When the reality is, the more that we can have free commerce with another country, the less likely they are to be angry at us, to hate us, except for their fundamentalists, and we've got fundamentalists here that don't like us. When it comes to Russia, Russia is actively excluding us from trade, actively pushing us away. We're actively doing it with them. That leads in one direction only. If it continues down this direction, it's going to lead to some form of hot war.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not with us, maybe with proxies that we're fighting just like the Cold War, but that's a truth that is writ large in the history of diplomacy and the history of economics, is that the more communication you have, the better, which is part of the reason why we were so angry and still are angry at Iran, is because the number one way of communication to create trade, to create peace, is through diplomacy, and they slapped us in the face there. This is why we haven't dropped our sanctions,
mm-hmm. Well, we
but
also,
that other people have.
We also, they openly support Hezbollah and Hamas.
Right. Which
and,
we have designated as terrorist organizations. They are terrorists.
But there's an interesting little conundrum here. They are very, very much against ISIL or whatever it's called
ISIS.
This week.
ISIS.
Well, ISIS
yeah.
or ISIL or...
ISIS or ISIL or IS
they, actually,
or
there's
Islamic
something else
State
you can
or,
call them that they don't like. But the so,
ISIL
so-called.
They don't like, yeah.
Anyway, whatever it is, they are very anti-ISIL, and they consider them because it's a religious split going on over there. It's, again, complicated.
Yeah.
But, yeah, people have asked me already what do I think of the Iranian nuclear deal, and I said, you know, the bottom line to it, first, is not a treaty. Secondly, I think it's as good as we're going to get in this universe because the Europeans were, in essence, saying, with or without a deal, we're going to start trading with them again.
Yeah, we'll be taking – the president said this, although he's saying it as a glowing point. It's not really part of what was created on the U.S. side. Although Kerry was involved, he was not the chief negotiator. He just was the chief – face for the cameras. 98% of their enriched uranium, the stuff that is usable for nuclear weapons, is being removed from Iran under
but
this deal.
It's not actually removed. They're going to put it someplace and lock it down.
Lock it down.
And put guards on it where we can monitor it 24
yeah.
hours a day. But,
yeah.
You know, and is it the best of all, you know, did we get them to shut down their process?
No.
On the other hand, and in 15 years they can start it up again. The issue is that I think everyone that I know of that's in, that has looked at this in any depth have concluded that 15 years from now, there's a very high probability that the Supreme Leader will be dead.
Yeah.
And
another one will be there, though.
They will be in a position, because based on what we've seen in history, if we don't isolate them...
They're becoming more secular. They're becoming less religious.
Where they will be dependent upon trade, and the idea of cutting off trade would be horrific. Speaking of cutting off trade, we're coming to the end of the second hour on this Saturday, July 18th. We have broken another record today. We've had exactly zero calls.
That's not a record.
Yeah, it is, because it's circular.
Oh, right. Zero is definitely a record. We didn't break it, though. If we had a call, that would break the zero. So.
Well, but I mean, zero is the record, and this is the newest zero. And so apparently, either what we were saying was so phenomenally interesting that no one felt like they should call, or no one was listening, and I'm not, or maybe something
listening.
In between.
I wasn't listening.
But you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and you're certainly welcome to give us a call or send us an email off the air, obviously, if you want our services, and also if you'd like to make a comment on the show or suggest something we might want to talk about in the future. And you can give us we have a voicemail at locally. On weekends, and there's a live person answering the phone during the week at 947-1111. That's 947-1111. We got that telephone number so I could remember it. And then the other number is
1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN.
See, that's another one I can remember, 914-PLAN.
You can also reach us by email, which he remembers because it's his own name.
Yeah, that's how I can remember it.
Jeff@tpwc.com or Jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and listen to our podcasts. If you haven't gotten enough insanity today, you can increase your insanity quotient drastically by visiting us, looking at our ugly mugs, looking at the beautiful staff faces, and reading our philosophies. So until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Fort Hood, proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.